are, episode 33.
Wow.
And I'm joined by my lovely wife, Justine.
Yes, hello.
Hello. Now, you were on episode 3. You're on episode 33. What's been your favourite episode of the Chattering Classes that you've enjoyed listening to over the years?
Who have I listened to?
I don't know.
Not many, I just haven't had the time.
Yeah.
I listened to one of Alison's, which was interesting.
Mm.
And I did listen to another one's. Can't quite remember. Who was missing?
I don't know.
Who have you interviewed? Go through the memories.
33 episodes. All the boys from What a Pair of Trousers.
Yeah.
Nick several times. Riley a couple of times.
I listened to one of Emma Riley's. A couple of times. Definitely.
Emily Squires.
I think the only ones I remember are the ones I was sitting in on.
Yeah, that's true. You have sat in on a couple.
Which, yeah. But, not all of them.
What do you make of all this? Of your husband's podcasting mania?
Hobby?
Hobby, yes, indeed.
Seem to enjoy it?
Yeah. Why don't you listen to them?
I don't know. I mean to. I just never get around to it. I find I need uninterrupted time just to sit. And I don't know. I also feel like, what am I going to look at while I'm listening to it? You kind of need to be doing something like driving or I don't know. I just feel like I don't want to just sit staring at this space listening to it. That's my main problem.
Yeah.
But then if I do stuff, then I tend to get distracted. So it's just. It would be good, excellent to listen to driving to and from work.
Yeah.
But
not going on a run. Not good running.
No, I prefer music.
Yeah, that's true.
No, yeah. So that's my problem.
I do.
Where do you people listen to it? How do you listen to it?
On the way to work, like you said.
Yeah.
Well,
if I can get it hooked up to listen to, but I don't know how.
Anytime I'm doing chores is a good time.
I have to get it onto CD or something.
Mm-hmm. Chores is always a good one. And before bed.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, just staring.
That's always been my problem with podcasts. It's just,
you can't have it on. You need to focus.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then if I start doing something else, like reading something, then I get distracted.
Yeah,
so
you can't do that.
I find it just the timing. But not that I'm not interested. I definitely am. I really enjoyed the ones I've heard. But that's why I much prefer to watch blogs. It's a similar sort of thing, but I can watch it. I can watch them.
Mm.
But sorry, did I say blog? Vlogs, I mean. Video blogs. Yeah, where people put them on YouTube and they talk to you. I like those because you can look at them. I prefer these if I could watch it and listen to you.
Huh. All right. So to take under consideration, I'll make a note.
I would
have a chat to my people.
Not that I'd agree to be filmed, but
no,
I'd like to watch other people.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, tonight we're talking about foreign films.
Yes.
Is that
I don't
correct?
Know why Matthew asked me to. I'm sure anyone hears I'm going to be on. They're going to tune out no one seems to like my movies. But anyway, I'll happily talk about them.
Episode 3 was entitled The Sorrow and the Pity.
Yes, and this episode is probably worse. We started there and we've gone.
We're digging a little deeper, aren't we, tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, so your favourite foreign films. Like you said, what's the deal? What is the deal with you and sad as all get out movies?
Well, I don't think they particularly have to be sad. I like movies that are real, realist sort of movies, which are more often than not, you know, sad tales.
Yeah.
You know, like I like documentaries and I've seen some really funny documentaries and uplifting stories, but, you know, with films, it tends to be, the realist kind of stuff I like is often sad.
You're not one for a blockbuster, are you?
No, not one for a blockbuster. Not really one for a comedy romance.
No. Well, you are one for a comedy romance. It's just, like, very specific.
Yeah.
When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, it was a notable exceptions.
Pretty Woman. There were a few in the like late 80s, early 90s, weren't they?
Yeah, Uncle Buck.
Well, yeah.
Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Any John Candy
I'm
movie?
Not adverse to comedies
no,
at all.
No, that's true.
But they have to be, you know, like a good certain caliber.
I have had to like bend your arm to watch. Well, I had to bend your arm to watch Shaun of the Dead. And
really?
Anchorman and all of those really silly movies. I have to bend your arm to watch. Just to...
And What We Do in the Shadows. I did.
Yeah, no, that was good, yeah. That's a foreign film. I've made that
yes,
in New Zealand.
True.
And Boy, remember, was it Boy? That one was alright from New Zealand. There's a new one coming out by the either the same director or same producer of those movies. We should remember it comes out next week. I just want to add for it. It looks good. So, what are we going to start off with?
We've got Tomboy, which is not a sad one, so we can start.
Oh,
with
let's
that
start
one,
there. Yeah, we'll start off, and we may progressively get bleaker.
So don't confuse this with the Australian movie Tommy.
Yep, or the Chris Farley movie, Tommy Boy.
Yes, Tommy Boy. No, it's neither of those. It's Tomboy. It's a French movie.
Yeah.
Céline Sciamma is the director, 2011.
Now, how did you come across this? Did someone recommend it to you, or did you...
Well, it was reviewed because I always watch At the Movies with Margaret and David, and I remember it being reviewed there and seeing reviews for it. It was 2011, so it was around the time I had Noelle, so I was busy
and
never got around to watching it until... couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It had always been on my list to watch, so yeah, watched it and it was beautiful.
Do you want to give a brief rundown of
so
the
story? So it's a very simple story, and it's about a child, a little girl who is moving to a new town. She's 10, moving to a new town with her family, and she's a tomboy and looks... to people who don't know her, would look like a boy. She's that's that prepubescent time where she's not, she doesn't have any of those characteristics of a woman, you know. She hasn't, so with short hair, most kids you really can't tell the difference if they're wearing androgynous clothing. So she's asked when she gets to this new town, someone asked what her name is, but in the French way it was, they asked in a way that...
Yeah, it's a masculine way.
Yeah, so they were expecting a male's name. So she just went along with it and gave a male's name. And then, so that was in summer. And then the whole summer leading up to school, she's got to keep this charade up of being a boy.
Yeah.
So it's funny and it's just, it's so cute. And it's really done in such an empathetic way. All the characters that are presented, with such empathy and... just beautiful. It's very much in that prepubescent time with kids. They're out playing sport, they're having fun, the games, it lets you into this, and she's got this particular style where you really go along, you're in the world of kids with her, and you're in the game, like she moves around with the character, and it's just very, you know, brings back, it's quite nostalgic, brings back those sort of feelings of being 10 and just playing.
Being outside.
Being
all
outside
day.
And meeting new friends and all of that stuff. She's, but then there's that layer of having to pretend that she's, keeping up that image that she's a boy. So there's a lot of gender issues, you know, coming up, but not... It's not done in a heavy-handed way. It's
no, the most obvious scene is the play... soccer.
Yeah.
All the kids, the neighbourhood kids are playing soccer, and she's standing with the girls watching the boys play soccer, and the boys are all shirtless.
Yeah.
And
the girls aren't allowed to play.
And the girls aren't allowed to play, but they're like, come on, can you remember what her male name is? Because it's Lura is the girl's name, but I can't remember what she... Mikael, is it?
Yeah, Mikael, yeah.
And so they're calling out, yeah, like, come and play. And so it's one of those... One of the few moments where you're like, oh, okay, so she's looking at the girls can't play, so she's going to, again, keep pretending to be the boy, takes the shirt off, runs around. And again, like you said, there's no difference.
Yeah, and that's a really beautiful scene, really standout scene, is her, it follow, the camera follows her in the game, and she sees all the boys with their shirts off, and she strips off, and it's just, she's got short hair, and she's, yeah, it's prepubescent, so there's no, and there is no difference between her and the boys. She's just moving along, she's moving like they do, she's playing the game. So it definitely is, you know, it's a commentary on gender, yeah, and, you know, how much we, our perceptions of how kids should be as boys and girls, sort of influence how they act, yeah, and how really there isn't much difference between them at that age.
No.
It's how much of it is just the social expectations put on them. And then there is this, you know, through the whole movie, there's this overlaying tension of, well, they've got to find out because she's going to start school and, you know, the ruse is going to be up. So there's this tension the whole way through, thinking that, you know, everyone's going to find out. And there's that funny scene where all the boys, the neighborhood boys, are just pissing, you know, up against a tree, just all in front of each other, and she has to run off and find somewhere to squat. And I think someone sees her doing that.
Yeah.
So there's all these, yeah, moments where it could come undone. So you really feel for her.
But that's where that, like you said, the empathy comes through, because there's a sense of unease,
yeah,
through the film and tension, but it's not over dramatic.
No, it's very lightly done, and it's you know, it's not heavy handed with, well, what is she? Is she a lesbian, or is she gonna, it's
yeah,
it doesn't delve into any, yeah, of that, and because it doesn't matter. She could be, she could not be.
And
she
doesn't even like you said, it's not heavy handed. Look at what society does to.
No, it's just very gently done. And
even what I found was a really great scene is when her mother finds out. The mother's reaction, yes, again, is, it could have been like, oh, whoa, oh my God, what kind of crazy person are you? But like you said, the empathetic understanding the mother has.
You actually feel, even though her reaction is, she's quite angry, and when she finds out what she's been doing,
yeah,
but you do have empathy for and understanding, and me personally as well, you know, with having a daughter who hasn't really fit that gender norm, you know, like, norm, I guess, what society expects little girls to be. There's a scene where she had been, she makes friends with the little girl, and the girl puts some makeup on her, and she thought it was funny, you know, dressing up her, you know, friend who's a boy with makeup.
Yeah.
And she went along with it, and then came home, and the mum had seen the remnants of makeup, and her way were thinking, oh, well, she's starting to, you know,
trying to become a real girl.
To be a girl, exploring that. And I could really relate to that, because there's been times where Violet's decided to experiment wearing a dress, or having longer hair, or things like that, and you do get a moment of, oh, that's good. She's, you know, not that I've ever, you know, insisted she did any of those things, but you think, oh, she's starting to explore that side a bit more, you know, then that's good. She's, you know, like,
it is weird. It's that when Violet, at Christmas, was it at Christmas time, where she started to wear one dress that she really liked, and when I saw her in it, it was my reaction was a reaction of a parent whose son had decided to put on a dress.
Yeah, she was just trying it on.
Yeah, it was foreign, and I thought, oh, I'll have to recalibrate my brain to work this out, which is horrible. Shouldn't have to do that.
But as she's got older, she has experimented. She'll never be, I don't think, a really girly girl, and that's totally fine. Hmm. But she's, as she's got older, she's not so rigid with the having to, you know, always wear the stuff from the boy section and things like that, and to not be recognised as a girl. She's definitely, you know, moving away from that. But it was something that, you know, like, I could imagine Violet or any kid sort of doing, just getting yourself in that position and just, oh, you know, like, yeah, I'm a girl, or I'm a boy, and not really thinking through the consequences of it, just a spur-of-the-moment thing. Because kids don't, you know, like, you live in the moment.
Violet doesn't correct
people. No, and that's right. If they think she's a boy. Her hair's a bit longer now, so it doesn't happen as often.
But she never did in the past. Her sister was always the one that would say, no, yeah, she's a girl, but she never corrected people. But what I wanted to talk about was when we watched this movie for the first time, it was eerily
the same similar.
As our girls. You had the older girl, the tomboy of the movie with the short hair, wanting to be a boy or act like a boy. And then you had the younger sister who was a princess, and just their interactions.
Their interactions and also the way the parents
very well observed,
were
it?
With the kids. Like, it was it was very much like our family. It was very strange. It was like, yeah, they'd observed us and put it in a movie. Even down to this little details, like the mum, you know, said to her, I think, you know, I've painted the room blue, or you can have the blue room, because she knows it's her favourite colour. And then she gave her a little key so she can get in out of the house, and it was like a red necklace thing or rope, and you see the girl Laura go and change it to a blue one,
yeah,
like, so her mum couldn't see, and just little details like that. It was just the little interactions were gorgeous, and just exploring all those issues of kids and gender, and, you know, gender roles, and how much society influences the way kids, you know, perceive themselves. And I find gender, it's just such a fascinating topic, and it's not too, you know, there are some things that it gets at, because it does all sort of come out in the end as it has to, but you don't, it doesn't, it's not terribly sad, or, you know, it's very gentle, and
Because it could be a hysterical review, witch hunt kind of thing, but...
And I like it that it's left open, that you don't know, oh, is she going to perhaps, you know, is she a boy in a girl's body? Is she going to go down that path, or maybe not? Maybe it's just a stage she's going through and trying it on, being a boy and then going to be a girl. It doesn't tell you how it ends, so I love that too, that it's left open. Because it's not uncommon for girls and boys to go through that stage. I've read that it's very normal, in fact. That's why boys often want to, you know, dress up as girls, or because they say if it's not like encouraged either way, that girls and boys will, you know, gravitate to either side with clothes and with toys and things like that. But it's just that usually it's very heavily influenced for them for what they should play with and stuff like that. So, but naturally, apparently, it's a very normal phenomenon. It's like trying on something to know what they are as much as what they're not.
Yeah.
So it can be just a normal phase of childhood. So it doesn't, make any predictions of what happens during the future. It's just that moment in time, that summer, very specific to that summer in her life. And beautiful movie.
Yeah.
Which there's another one that she did, this same director, Sayama, and it was part of the French Film Festival last year, and with friends. It's called Girls.
Yeah.
And that's awesome as well. Some very memorable scenes in that too. And she's a really good director, I think.
Awesome. Well, that's Tomboy. What's next on your list?
We've
gone from the light. It's quite a light, airy movie, and now we're going to... Which one of those do you want to choose?
Oh, goodness. Well, there's two. Both were 2002, actually. Lilia Forever, which is a Swedish, Danish production.
Yes.
And the other one is Irreversible, which is a French movie.
Well, we'll talk Irreversible...
both from 2002.
First.
Okay.
Now, Irreversible is, is infamous.
Yes.
More than famous.
Gaspar Noé is the director. Now I'd heard of it, but it wasn't until the podcast with
Riley,
where he spoke, because we seem to have quite similar tastes, and that was one of his that he was talking about. And I thought, oh, I really should see that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was a band. Was that one of the movies that Little Johnny banned when it came out?
Yeah, I think it was banned. There was a lot of controversy surrounding it, and I'd heard of it, obviously, but I just had never seen it.
Yeah.
Monica Bellucci, you know, fairly famous actress in the main role, Vincent Castle. Yeah, but I hadn't seen it till last year.
And it's told backwards.
Yeah, so it's non-linear, the narrative, and it... Yeah, so it begins at the end of the story with a horrendous act of violence that you don't know where it's come from.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to tell the story of how it ended in this horrible, horrible act of violence upon this man. It's just an amazing movie, I think. It's known for the rape scene. It's quite famous, that 10 minutes long,
yeah.
Unflinching.
No edits.
It's shocking. It really is. I did have to look away. I couldn't continue watching it. And to this day, I don't get flashbacks of it.
Oh, God.
It's really, really full on, but it's such an important part of the movie. But it's the... I don't know. What I got from the movie is... and the way it was sequenced, it's about vengeance, really, and violence. And how, you know, can you justify violence, act of violence, for the reasons in which it's being done, or is violence just violence wrong?
Yeah.
So forcing you to see that it was an act of vengeance that you find out was what the first one was, that you judge the character a certain way, and then when you see the reasons why it was happening, it forces you to sort of reevaluate that and put yourself in that position. Would you be capable of doing that such thing? And if so, does that make you any better or worse than the person who did the act that you're avenging? You know, like it brings up a lot of those issues.
What did you think about that? How did you react personally to that?
I think it's, well, what I got from the movie is that all violence is wrong, you know, and that it's wrong to pick and choose which, you know, you can say this is wrong because this, for the reasons, taking someone's life or inflicting that physical harm upon someone is wrong in any circumstance. That's what I got from it, but other people who watch it might think otherwise.
Yeah.
Because the scene, you know, the rape scene is so, so traumatic.
That's interesting, like, that you say, I don't know why, but maybe you watched it recently, but, I mean, that reminds me of when I saw Once Were Warriors in the cinema, which is a violent movie and an undercurrent and an uneasy feeling of violence could happen at any moment. And then at the end... The father in Once Were Warriors beats up the guy who's been abusing the daughter. And I remember being in the cinema and having people... Oh, I remember old ladies sitting behind me in the cinema almost cheering him on when he's beating up.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And that was kind of, well, what are we cheering?
But I think that movie does not... I don't think it glorifies him at all. He ends up in a...
No, it doesn't glorify. But I know
that,
I mean?
Yeah, like people's reactions to that, yeah.
To vengeance is a different attitude.
That's right. When really it's you're taking someone's life in your hands, and you can't put yourself then above that person, you know. I think the other important thing that I got from it too is that for victims of abuse and victims of rape, it's so easy to just put it out of your mind and think, oh, that happened to that person, or any kind of abuse, really. And I think for victims to have people see it and see it in such a unedited, raw, real way that affects you, I think that's so powerful. It's one of those things everyone should see because you'll never be able to... I mean, the thing is, sexual abuse is so, and rape is often, it's got the victim often has to cop a lot of flack apart from, unlike other forms of violence. So
They have to prove
that they're always sort of, the presumption is that they're lying. They have to prove that they're not.
Well, there's grey area.
It's difficult, you know, whereas if it's someone who was in a bank robbery, was exposed to other sorts of violence, it's immediate sympathy, whereas you see it so often, victims of rape or sexual assault are made to have to relive this experience and tell their side of the story, and it's, I think it's too easy to sort of play it down. And I think it has been done. Rape, and so especially, you know, crimes against women have been sort of brushed aside, and this kind of movie just, wow, you never can forget it, those images, and it's very real. There was a lot of controversy about the scene because it makes it clear that the perpetrator was homosexual, so it was seen as, you know, being homophobic in the extreme because this was such a monstrous character that was performing this act.
Hmm.
You know, and kudos to the actor. Wow. It would have been such, both of them, like, absolutely horrendous scene. Even just watching it, it was, you know, you're quite traumatised by it. I don't know how they got through it, but what about you? Have you ever seen a rape scene more real than that?
No, it's not nice. It's like you said, it does stay with you, and it does make you, I think about it, like, as it's happening, but also about what role does the director have in getting that point of view across.
Mm.
So in his mind, you see, was that always going to be a, like you said, a 10-minute scene with no breaks in it? You know what I mean?
Mm.
Was the director so uncompromising that they were like, no, this is...
That's right, yeah.
This is the way it's... I'm always interested in when you show this movie to distributors or show movies and they say, no, you need to change that. It's always like the ghost...
I think it's a centre point of the movie.
Yeah.
It had to be...
What I've always get out of it, I've seen it a couple of times now, is how... Like the reaction of the men in it rings very true as well. Like it's a man's job to fix things.
Avenge.
Number one, that it's, he thinks it's his fault that it's happened to her because he's a man and he should be protecting her. And then number two, his reaction is, well, I have to do something, so I'm going to avenge this. In an equal, would you say equally violent way?
Yeah, definitely. In a different way, but equally violent.
Yes, yeah. As a
heinous.
As a man's like, well, I have to fix this.
Exactly, and that's what the director is doing, is putting these two horrendous acts of violence together and saying, which is morally okay.
Yeah.
You decide. But I think, going back to the homosexual point, which I was going to, what I got from it, is that I didn't see it as homophobic. I saw it as a way of showing that rape is not about sex. It's not about being sexually attracted to the person. And I think that was just an easy way to put that there, which is very important. It's not about sex. It's about power. Mm. And violence. That was what I got from it. But, everyone's got their own interpretation, but...
Yeah,
I think it was just an easy way to sort of get that point across that he wasn't wanting to have sex with her. It wasn't about that.
Yeah.
The other movie that I think of as we're talking about this is, which is not a foreign film, but Mysterious Skin, which is an American movie that it also, I think, everyone should watch. And that's about childhood sexual abuse. But it's a lot of movies are sort of touch on the subject or, you get... That's about a character who this has happened to. But I've never seen a movie in which it's so realistically portrayed and beautifully acted as well, and showing the consequences of it for the kids involved. It's similar on that level, that it forces you to look and in an unflinching way presents this is what it is.
Yeah.
This is the people. It's not a monster. It's not someone that you've never seen. This is people are all around you that can do this to a child. You know, like, it's very confronting but beautiful movie.
Yeah.
But similar in that way, I think.
So it's not that you like movies that are...
I like movies that challenge you.
But yeah, movies that... I mean,
affect you.
The movie I remember watching with you, which is similar to this, is it The Woodsman?
Yeah.
With Kevin Bacon in it. Mm. And that's another movie where you go, okay, this man's a convicted pedophile.
Mm.
And he's living with that, and he's trying to live as normal life as possible, but then he's got to deal with what he's done and also what he kind of wants to do again, trying to suppress that within him.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes it the same kind of case that he's not a monster.
Exactly. These are real people that are performing these horrendous...
Yeah, but there's those challenges there. Things that...
And that's more scary, the fact that they are real.
And that people, again, that's the point, isn't it?
The people you know, their neighbours.
Yeah. We like to make them just, they're monsters and they're outside humanity.
Yeah.
Because it makes it easier to deal with.
Exactly.
Rather than just say, they're just normal people, but they just do this.
Yeah.
Because that's far scarier and you can't pick them in a crowd.
Mm.
But it's...
And I think, you know, like... I don't like it that people have the luxury to just say, that's too depressing, I don't want to see that. You know, victims, of which there are huge numbers, don't have that luxury of just switching off and saying, that doesn't happen to me, that doesn't happen to people I know. So I think, you know, it's important to have these movies that bring it out and say, and force you to look at it and feel empathy, you know, understand the situation.
And feel confronted by a confronting thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You should be confronted.
Yeah. And, so really, really affected me, that movie. And also the other beautiful thing about it is that it, the other theme is that how quickly life can change. So it shows you this, what happens to this poor woman. And then, and because it's non-linear, then it goes back and shows what she was doing that day.
Yeah.
And what was going on in her life. And, you know, and then ends in this idyllic setting in which she had no idea about this life-changing, awful, evil thing that was about to happen to her.
Yeah, and so that is a really... that's
it's so powerful.
Unsettling as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that you're watching this lovely moment, and you're
oblivious
like, this is going to happen
in
to
what
you.
Would she would probably say is one of the happiest sort of moments of her life, and that she has no idea of what is around the corner, and it's just so... so touching.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really glad I see it. And, you know, and the whole media beat up about it, and the banning and all that. I had no idea that it was so, it was such a layered movie. You know, it wasn't just this gratuitous violence and sex.
Can we use the term like provocative as like a negative thing sometimes? Like, he's just trying to provoke the audience and making them angry.
I mean, ban it. This should be something that everyone should be seeing, not banned. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will have to move on.
So they were the two from 2002.
So yeah, Lilia Forever.
Oh, Lilia Forever. Okay. So
Lilia Forever. I'll just give the listeners some feedback. Lilia Forever, you saw at Leeds, was it?
Yes.
You went to Leeds University when we both lived in England. And you were at Leeds University and you went to see this with your friend Kerry Ann.
Yeah, there was a really cool little old cinema that used to play sort of art house.
Okay, so this wasn't at the uni? This wasn't through...
No.
Okay.
This was at... I don't even know where it was, but they...
I know what you
art
mean.
House.
Yeah, it was a small...
Flick house.
Just to sit on wooden benches.
Yeah,
and like
alternative.
That.
Very
old.
They'd show like really cool stuff. It was a really cool little, cinema.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I went along with my friend Kerry Ann and...
Yes, and she came in and said, you have to see this movie. It was fantastic. And I said, really? She said, yeah, we howled.
Well, we were both crying. Kerry Ann was howling.
Literally,
she was sobbing. Like, I was dabbing my eyes and probably gasping. And Kerry Ann was literally sobbing, the poor darling. It was just, it was pretty full on.
So this is Romanian, did you say?
No. This is the Swedish-Danish. So Lucas Moodysson is the director. It's filmed in... It's set in... It's non-specific.
Yeah.
But it's somewhere in the former Soviet Union. It's actually filmed in Estonia, so that gives you an idea of what it looks like. But it doesn't ever say where exactly it is. But it's bleak. It's poor. Run down. Yeah, it's... pretty depressing area. And a young girl is basically abandoned by her mother, who marries someone and heads off to the United States, and this girl is left behind. And it's what she does to survive, basically. She ends up getting involved in the sex trade, sex slavery world. And then the way it's filmed, you basically get to enjoy the... being a sex slave from, like, it's her perspective for that period of time. So it's the camera is looking from her perspective. So you're looking at what she's seeing in this world, and it's just, so it really is, again, as well, you hear of sex slavery and these things happening to girls in these situations, but yeah, it's, when you're exposed to it like that and put in the perspective of the girl, it's really affecting. Rammstein does the soundtrack.
Rammstein does the
soundtrack. Yeah, it's a really cool soundtrack and, you know, quite jarring. But, yeah, it starts bleak and it goes even bleaker. It's not a happy tale, but again,
so you didn't find it, I was going to say, heavy-handed. I find sometimes... when you watch a movie where lots of bad stuff happens.
Well, this was, but I thought it was very, a lot of bad stuff happens, but it was, I thought it was quite realistic though. And look, people, she's a very strong character. She's strong, she's smart, she's, you know, she's trying to just do what she can to survive. She's a survivor, and that's how she ended up in that sex industry. It was to make money.
But I guess
she needed to, you know, like, I thought it was very real, the situation she's in and what she did to survive.
I guess it's,
and then that,
you're not going to hear many tales of it set in that industry. It's not, things don't usually get better, do they? They usually get worse before they,
well, her options were not great. There was not, she wasn't going to have a happy ending. But there's children being abandoned. This stuff happens, you know. And the, yeah, it's just pretty sad all around. But the director, he's apparently a Christian, very, very religious guy. So there's all these religious imageries sort of woven through it as well, which are quite interesting. And, yeah, I think it... it definitely sort of puts you in that the place and mode, what he evokes of the time of the being in the Soviet Union at that time, and the bleakness of it, and the scenery, and it's just, yeah, it's quite incredible. And the acting of the girl that plays Lilia is amazing as well, but it's definitely one that stays with you. I think it's really important as well, because when she enters into the sex slave world, so she's promised a job and decent wages in Sweden, gets taken, their passport is taken off her, and she's basically slave. And the guy's promising her in Sweden there's this or that, and when she gets to this unit, looks out, it doesn't look much different. She was just in some pretty poor area. It doesn't look much different to where she came from.
Yeah.
And she's just locked in this unit and taken out to have sex with these men. Now, these men, and this is what I think is really good about the movie as well, it shows they're just from all walks of life. They don't know that she's a sex slave, a lot of them. They're just paying for a prostitute to come. She's taken there. So it shows you how unwittingly men can, once when they're involved in that industry, how they can also be contributing to it. So I think, I hope men who pay for sex from different ways, watch it and see how, you know, that the situations that you could be contributing to, which are not pleasant. But these are not, again, they're not monsters. They are fathers and husbands and ordinary guys. But what they are involved in, unwittingly even, is this industry that has dire consequences for this girl.
But again, it's the same concept of not looking at where you are or what you are doing with any kind of depth.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the problem I have, you know, like I've got a conflicting feeling towards the sex industry. In on one hand, I think, and that book that I read, In My Skin, talks about how she Kate Holden. She originally got involved in it as a way to keep up her heroin addiction, but then found it to be quite empowering, and goes into great detail in the book about the wonderful time she had doing it and not so wonderful, but how the choice she had to do it was really important, and that to her it was really empowering. So it's not the sex industry itself, it's just that I think, yeah, this being aware of what when you're going in and paying for this, just to, you know, give you that awareness of the industry. You can't turn your eye to, you know, it's not all great. It's not all, oh, these women are just loving it. They're, you know, feeling empowered and they've got a right to do it and they are doing it. There's also this other side that I think you need to recognise as well, that it can be that some girls that is their only option, and that in a lot of cases it's it can have dire.
It's true. There,
consequences.
While talking about this, the movie that there was an Australian movie came out not long after this called The Jammed, which was set in Victoria.
Yeah, and that was similar,
very similar.
Yeah.
About illegal trafficking for the sex industry and bringing people over here and then saying, all right, you have to pay off your debt to us by working as a sex slave.
Oh, yeah, and it happens. Happens in Australia, happens everywhere. So, again, it's one of those timeless stories. It's set in this particular time, but it happens all over the world and there's girls in this situation everywhere. So, yeah, eye-opening. Yeah. And, again, just the way it's filmed from her perspective, it's just so affecting, really good.
All right. We're going to move on to the next film, which was 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Yeah, so this is a 2007 one set in communist Romania under Ceausescu. He's sort of the last years of his evil regime.
Yeah, his dictatorship.
Dictatorship. So really interesting time and place that I really have no idea about. So But it's a humanist story, like it's basically tells the story of these two girls who, so around this time it was the dictator's wife, so Ceausescu's wife decided to completely outlaw abortions. So then the consequence that had on women who are needing abortions, which happens all over.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then just through the movie, it doesn't go into much detail, but you get the idea and you definitely get the sense of what he evokes of a very oppressive regime, you know, even just walking down the street, catching a bus, everything they do has got this sense of uneasiness. Mm. So not even knowing what was happening sort of politically or socially at the time, it is brilliantly evokes this time and place, doesn't it, of oppression and unease, and then what these girls have to go through to access the abortion and the consequences of that. It's just, well, what do you think? You saw it?
Yeah, but it's again, it's a small story.
Yeah,
which represents like a much larger image. A lot of these movies are about oppressed women.
Yeah, and I think that the similarities are Lilia Forever, you know, being the sex industry, sex slavery, and
if you want to make an
illegal
about
abortions. I mean, these aren't nice things, but these are things that happen.
Yeah,
these are things that happen all over, all the time, that people have to, you know, and it's in, you know, in America, it's getting harder and harder for women to access legal abortions. In Poland, it's been outlawed or about to be outlawed because of the extreme religious influence in the government. You know, women are going through this today. So it's a really important story to be told of what is the consequence, you know, the, yeah.
Not being able to access.
Of not being able to access it.
Health.
Yeah, basic
healthcare health. That they actually legally,
yeah,
are constitutionally allowed.
Yeah.
But all four of these movies really are about, to tie them all together, it's about women or females having some kind of oppression put on them, whether it's societal or actual physical or just by actions of men. In the case of Lily Forever, in 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, just putting their trust in the wrong people as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And just what women have to go through to get basic human rights, basically treated in a nice manner, I guess. Yeah.
Well, we were talking about it only this morning in the car. We were playing the Mary Poppins soundtrack, and the sister suffragette song came on, and you know, I was saying how when I was little, I didn't even understand what that was about, and we'll just skip it. But as an adult, listening to it and thinking, wow, you know, like these girls, to them, how foreign it would be that women couldn't vote. I'm like, that's how the citizens were treated. Women weren't allowed to vote. How crazy that seems.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of not pleasant things happening to women, and women having to, you know, pay the consequences for these, again, like in this time, is that these political decisions or religious ideologies that have such awful consequences. So, yeah, a small story, but also really about friendship and about how the girls, and again, like the strength of these girls too, that of what they, oh my goodness, like the resolve of the friendship, how they have to rely on each other and to get through this awful situation, and what they do, like such strength, really. I think, and it's very suspenseful as well. It's like minimalist, but every line, every word,
because has they're a being purpose. Watched. It's
that... They're being, yeah, that's in the oppression. It's like, it, yeah, it's there's not, yeah, it's minimal. There's not. I don't think there's any music. I don't think there is a soundtrack.
I was
going to
say
Tomboy's
just the same, with very little soundtrack, which I always appreciate in the movie.
And I love it too. Everything is there. Every word that's uttered is for a reason, and it's just so they're all just so beautifully directed. I mean, I think probably Irreversible is the more heavy-handed. I think there's a lot going on, a lot of dialogue, and there's a lot of scenes.
A lot of messages.
Yeah, the other ones are more minimalist, definitely.
Yeah.
But 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, brilliant movie, having it on the edge of your seat. There's a scene at a dinner party where you think it would be quite, it's just everyday conversation going on, but it's...
it's what's undercurrent of it.
It's the undercurrent of it, and the time limit of knowing where this character needs to go, but she's sort of held up in this mundane conversation and has to, you know, these conflicting things that she has to do, the tension in everyday life. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Thoroughly recommend it.
So what are the movies that you haven't mentioned? One of the things I expected you to have written down was I'm going to get his name wrong, Pedro Almodovar. I thought you were a big All About My Mother.
I just haven't seen those for a while. I love Almodovar. But I haven't seen them for a while, so I guess it was ones that I've seen recently. Yeah. All these ones I've either re-watched recently or I've seen fairly recently. So there was heaps of ones that I've loved over time, but I would have to go back and watch. Notable mentions, The White Ribbon and Audition, which is... The White Ribbon, I think it's... Is it Danish or...?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Danish or Swedish. It's certainly...
Swedish. It's a really... amazing, really unique movie. Enjoyed that. Shot in black and white.
Shot in beautiful black and white. Yeah, we saw it at the movies.
Beautiful. And Audition, which is a Japanese horror movie, which is really, really good.
I'm just trying to think. It's German.
German. Okay. Yeah. See, I haven't seen it since it came out.
Yeah, 2009. That was a while ago.
Yeah. Like, I would need to have rewatched it, and I'm sure I will still love it, but...
Yeah, it was a really freaky movie about kids and set before World War II.
Yeah.
And yes, he's Michael, is it Michael Haneke? Okay, I don't know his name properly. But he's the one, he did Amour, and he did Funny Games, which was a really
Funny
cool...
Games I saw fairly recently. That was pretty good.
So he's, again, someone who likes to challenge you with stuff.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Yeah, The White Ribbon was pretty full on and
very
different. Again, and I don't think it has any music in it.
No. Very it's such a unique style.
Yeah. But Audition, let's talk a bit about, because I was surprised there's no Japanese movies on here.
The one about the kids in the room. What's that one called?
So that was the one I was going to talk to you about. Now, first of all, we'll get to Audition, and then we'll talk about Nobody Knows.
Nobody Knows,
but
yeah.
Audition's a Japanese horror, because one of the things, I don't think in any of the movies that we've talked about, is your love of horror.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what kind of horror.
A good horror.
Psychological, schlocky.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
Oh, can I just mention one? It's not international, but Creep. That movie Creep.
Yeah, that was weird.
It's such a low-budget movie. It's got two actors, I think, in it.
Yeah.
Really, really just... interesting.
Very strange. Yes,
very
I recommend
strange,
that to a few
but
people.
Yeah, Creep. It's a good one.
That messed with my head for a while.
Yes. Yes.
So Audition is a crazy, crazy movie.
Yeah.
A Japanese movie, which starts off with a man looking for auditioning women to be his new wife.
Yeah. I see. I haven't seen it for years.
And then
I don't
it
remember.
It takes
the story
a decidedly darker turn. We won't go into any more detail.
I remember certain scenes.
Yeah.
It's quite.
We won't go into any more detail.
Quite
on that.
Shocking. But.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, really good.
Really weird and twisted. Japanese
very,
twistedness.
Very twisted. I wonder if there's been a remake, an American remake.
I don't think the Americans will touch that one.
No, it's distinctly Japanese.
Yeah, Japanese horror had a big resurgence or big. Upswing in the early 2000s, but we watched a movie called Nobody Knows.
Yeah, which it won, I think it won Best Foreign Film at the Oscars that year.
It might have won at Cannes, I think.
It was nominated for the Best Foreign.
But that was a movie which made us really miss Japan.
Yeah.
Because it had the mundanity, the small, really small details of living in Japan. In an apartment.
And that was a movie that I watched at pre-kids.
Yeah.
And then post-kids was a very different experience,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, definitely. So
Your emotions are so much raw.
The storyline is there's four kids.
Yeah. Well, not dissimilar to Lilia Forever. Or
yeah.
It doesn't go quite down the same path. But yeah, kids being abandoned.
Yeah, four
really,
kids and then living with a single mum. And then the mum... says she's found a date and she's
and she keeps them in secret. No one knows about them.
And then, yes, she just disappears.
And they're just sort of kept in this tiny little flat and there's the four of them just trying to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And trying to survive
on beautiful,
their own.
Small film. Again, a very
small
film, but very nice. But you didn't have any anime in there? You didn't have any Spirited Away or Totoro?
I love those.
Yeah. But none of those.
Well, I could have talked about more, but I
haven't.
There's lots more I could have spoken about, but...
Yeah, Spirited Away was one we saw, maybe when we were living in England. And that was certainly the first Miyazaki movie I'd seen, which made us... gobsmacked at the imagination behind that movie. Yeah, it's good now that our girls can watch those and Totoro.
Yes.
And what about, and we might wrap up on a lighter note, you're one of our favourite Japanese series of films is Kome no Ko. You're a big fan of Kome no Ko?
Oh, it's such a cute little Or do you call it Stop Go?
Yeah, Stop Go Animation about a cat and his two little friends. But he makes Stop Go Animations in the Stop Go Animations.
It was played at... They're just tiny little cute movies that are played at the big... Like as a preview, you know, during the preview, before the feature film. And it's this really cute little... Koneneko, this little cat and his escapades. And just very sweet. And then it'll be like on before, I think we saw Monster, like that really...
Yeah, Charlize Theron.
Shocking Charlize Theron about...
Eileen Waller.
Or the serial killer.
Yeah, so you watch this lovely little cat...
So juxtaposed.
Dancing around and setting up little... other toys are making a stop-go animation in his stop-go
totally
animation.
Totally cute.
Getting married and falling down and him sweating and stressing out about it. And then, oh, now we're going to watch this.
Now we'll watch that, no matter what it was, yeah.
It's a serious movie, yeah.
For adults, mind you. It wasn't a kid's movie, but that's the way. Everyone loves cute.
Yeah, everyone loves cute in Japan, don't they? Apart from, yeah, Audition.
They probably would have shown Koneneko before Audition as well, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Yeah, Battle Royale was another Japanese movie.
Yeah.
The kids just...
That was a good one.
School kids.
Love Battle Royale. And then you see The Hunger Games. It's like, oh, it's like, you know, not influenced by, but kind of in the same vein. Or
very,
genre,
yeah, very
same sort of storyline. And it's so tame. Like, I watched The Hunger Games story. There's nothing like Battle Royale.
Yeah,
it's
preschool
version of it.
I'm teaching The Hunger Games this term, and it says, you know, the author says, oh, I got the idea from watching, flicking between like a reality TV show and then a war thing, and wondering if the two were combined, and then going, okay, cool, let's watch Battle Royale. showing the preview of Battle Royale makes the kids go, what is this?
Yes. But it's actually quite tame when you see it. Nothing actually happens.
True. Yeah. It's.
I mean, it's you don't have blood and gore and like.
Action. It's fairly sanitized.
It's fairly sanitized. Yeah. It's like Twilight compared to True Blood or Penny Dreadful.
Getting in a plug for Penny Dreadful, which is all. Try and do it any way you can. Well, thank you, Justine. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
Thank you.
You know your stuff and you think about things.
There might be one person out there still listening.
I guarantee you there'll be at least two.
I'm not going to watch that.
Well, they don't have to watch it.
I don't want to be sad and depressed watching the movie, but you should. You should be.
Thank you, Justine. I'll see you in
30
more episodes.
I don't know about you, but when I've had a bad day, I just want to sit and watch a really depressing movie. Anyone else?
We're clearly soldiers in petty coats and dauntless crusaders for women's votes. Though we adore men individually, we agree that as a group they're rather stupid. Cast off the shackles of yesterday, shoulder to shoulder into the fray. Our daughters' daughters will adore us, and they'll sing in grateful chorus. Well done, sister suffragette. From Kensington to Billingsgate, one hears the restless cries from every corner of the land. Womankind, arise! Political equality and equal rights with men. Take heart, for Mrs. Pankhurst has been clapped in irons again. No more the meek and mild subservience we. We're fighting for our rights militantly. Never you fear! Shackles of yesterday, and shoulder to shoulder into the fray. Our daughters' daughters will.